This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 145. Can you hear me now? Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a beautiful Friday afternoon where it's way too darn hot and I'm wearing my Winter is Coming shirt in honor of this because it's the only way I'm getting through the day with these upper 90 temperatures and unbelievable humidity. And I'm here with my friend and co-host, Michael Martin.
Hoping for winter as well. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Actually, I'd be happy with some crisp October morns, but
fall is good. Fall is good. That's, you know, that's on a path to winter.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have an exciting show. An exciting show for you this week. And it starts with a whole bunch of stuff. A whole bunch of stuff. So we've been trying a new technique for gathering information for the show. We've got a Slack channel that we have set up for our co-hosts. And over the course of the week, we have a separate channel where all the different news feeds are that we track for various interesting things. And as we find things over the course of the week, we vote on them in the Slack channel. And the things that come to the highest vote end up rolling into our show ideas channel as input into what we're talking about today. So we've just gone through that. We did a little review. We did some testing. We had some fun. And we decided that we're going to do a whole show on communications. And it begins with an interesting blog post. I believe this was over on Mac Rumors about Siri. And this was about the lack of advancement in various voice services like Siri and Cortana and Alexis, and the claim that the reason that they are not as good as they could be is because of microphone technology. Michael, you had a chance to read this. What did you think?
Well, I think the microphones are really important in the way that they're used these days so you can hear what's happening.
Don't you agree?
Yeah, I don't know what this is. I don't know.
Yeah, so it's hard to put microphones on small devices, right? You know, in order for the Apple Watch to be able to know that you wanted to set the timer for 4 minutes, it needs to hear that. It needs to hear the spacing, and it needs to be able to act upon it. And I liked what the article had to say that said, look, if you own the stack, if you own the hardware and the software, you have probably a better likelihood of getting things right and better and faster. And that's what I think it was Craig. I don't have the article in front of me. Was saying Craig Federighi was saying about the Apple approach to this, but that the microphones had not improved quickly enough to really be able to do all there is to do.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting about this because, you know, I've been looking at lots of different voice assistants. I've played around with the one in Windows 10 on both a tablet and on my desktop. I've been playing around with the Apple Watch, Siri on the iPhone and the iPad. And this summer, all summer, we've had the beta for Mac Sierra, which also has Siri built into it. And the difference between those microphone technology or voice recognition technologies and stuff like Alexa and other dedicated devices, it's not just the microphone, it's also microphone placement and being able to triangulate sound and pinpoint sound within three-dimensional space as a way of zeroing in on where text is, voice is coming from and who is speaking, and being able to capture correctly those things that you need to capture versus all that other ambient noise that you want to kind of filter out so that the service works.
And so that someone doesn't say near you, set language Russian, when they just happen to be near you. And that's really not the command you wanted to do on your device.
Well, I you know, it's funny. I think it was Amazon did a commercial where they actually purposely in the television commercial activated people's devices. And I know many different podcasts that I listen to have like code words that they use when they're trying to describe a feature on a voice assistant, because so many of the listeners complain that every time I do this, blah, 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 I listen to your podcast and my Android device kicks off, right?
Yep.
And so really having that as an issue, clouds, for lack of a better term, the ability of these services to really take off and to add value. If I'm constantly worried that I'm going to pick up background noise, or I'm going to pick up commands from you that should be from me, or whatever the problem or challenge is, you want to get rid of that so that that you don't have that issue.
Do you remember Chirp?
Yes. Remember, we did a whole episode on Chirp and we were sending out chirps.
Yes. So, I mean, but that's the similar kind of thing, right? Any messaging solution that can be captured, interpreted, processed, acted upon, yeah, will have those kind of problems, right? You know, so you might be able to train voice like the old days with what Dragon Dictate and stuff like that, so it would adhere to your voice versus somebody else's voice. But to me, this is a problem that's going to exist well into the future, right? And the device will have to somehow be smart enough, and maybe that's the element of the three-dimensional space where your watch knows generally where the voice ought to be coming from, and if it comes from somewhere else, like not where your body is, then it could safely ignore what those commands are.
Well, just think about it, you know, from your own head, right? Humans developed stereoscopic hearing and stereoscopic eyes in order to allow us to exist appropriately in 3D space. And so having one microphone pick up on your watch means it doesn't have stereoscopic auditory capabilities. The thing about noise canceling and capabilities on the phone that's gotten so much better over the years is they tend to have two microphones now, and they can start doing some of that directional auditory pickup. And when you think of the watch, it needs to get a certain amount of spread between the microphones, and it needs to be able to have a sensitivity of the microphone in order to do that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Interesting ideas. I'd like to get a four-dimensional microphone spread, though. I think that would be really cool.
That's called a podcast.
See, there you go.
Because it has the dimension of time.
And you can speed us up. Or
slow us down.
You control the horizontal. Cool. So what else got?
So thinking about that and why it's so cool when, can you hear me now, right? Once you have these really good microphones or these strong advances in understanding voice, what do you do with it? Do you just book an Uber? No. You type faster. And there was a study recently reported, I think it was yesterday or this morning, from Stanford University, about a study at Stanford, University of Washington, and the Chinese search firm Baidu on the speed and effectiveness of using your voice in typing. And I was going to ask you your experience of, do you feel that you're more effective with voice transcription type services than you are at typing?
I do use it sometimes. I use it more for commands, to be honest, right? I use it especially for setting timers, you know, when I'm cooking or we're doing some time-boxed exercise. It's always great to do the set timer 10 minutes sort of thing and off you roll. The times that I use voice dictation is when I am moving quickly and need to keep my eyes on where I'm heading. So I might transcribe a text message while I'm walking and I couldn't just stay put, use my thumbs to type it, or use one finger to type it. So that's when I use voice transcription the most. And I would have to say that I've noticed a substantial improvement as well in the accuracy and certainly in the speed. I'm able to get things out faster by transcribing them. And frankly, I probably would be able to do much more transcription if it didn't just feel a little goofy if you're, you know, out and about somewhere and kind of saying things into thin air.
Yeah, that's a thing that I saw too. So I've been playing around with voice dictation and transcription services since about 1995. So, gosh, 21 years. And while the quality and the capabilities are getting better all the time, it still, to me, has kind of that stigma of you're talking into thin air, or you're that crazy person walking down the street going,
muttering to themselves. Yes.
Right, right. And
I'll make them pay.
The performances that I do each year with the local light opera group, we have one cast member who does all his work on his phone through voice. And you usually see him sitting over in the corner, holding his hand up to his face with the phone in it, mumbling. And I find it kind of creepy, to be honest.
You don't call him mumbles now, do you?
and just think about when you're at the office, a lot of offices are going to these agile open spaces, and I know you work in one of those, and it's already hard enough to get work done when everybody around you is talking.
Yes.
Or on conference calls, and now everybody's dictating their emails. That would just be extremely distracting to me.
Yeah.
However, again, if you have better directional pickups and you could just kind of talk like this, you know, don't have to talk really loud and it picks up fine and everything's good, you know, maybe that'd be okay. But I'm the kind of person, then I really want to hear what you're saying if you're whispering.
Well, not only that, we'd start calling you mumbles.
Exactly. And so while the study is interesting, and they talk about, you know, 3 times faster in English, 2.8 times faster in Mandarin. Error rates, though, were like 20 and 63% lower than typing. So that sounds really good. But their figures were based off of a study with only 38 participants. And so were these the participants who helped define the voice engine for the platform? Are these random people?
Or whose voices were used for the engine and platform too?
That's what I meant. Sorry.
Yeah.
Because I was one of the original people not one, right? There were many, many of us back in 95 where
I got a free lunch.
IBM at the time did a study across hundreds, if not more, employees to say, you know, spend 30 minutes one day and we'll use your voice print in teaching our system. So a lot of the early transcription stuff worked really well with my voice because mine was one of those voices that were mixed into the system.
Well, it was also the voice response unit engine for call centers and stuff like that, too.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know if I read too much into this story yet. I do think as the use increases and the uncomfortableness reduces, this will become more and more of the way to go forward. And I know there are lots of games lately that have changed their input method to go from, you know, click and point to text-based, right? Going back to the old Infocom games. Matter of fact, I'm playing the Mr. Robot game that we mentioned last week.
Right.
And it's just a big chat game, which is very much an Infocom kind of text adventure game. And it would only take, you know, a little tweak and suddenly it's a talk to me game.
Sure, sure. And that was why I asked you about that last time, too, you know, because it could. Your phone could ring and you could get, you know, a voicemail or even an interaction, right? That's not really out of the question for this sort of thing.
And so the changing pattern of how we communicate and how we communicate what we're thinking via voice, I think, is kind of really interesting. And this study kind of bears that out as it's getting better. And as it gets better, I do think it'll become more acceptable. And as it becomes more acceptable, it'll get even better because more people will be testing it and
so
providing.
I have a challenge for our listening audience and maybe for us if we choose to accept it. If you choose to accept it, pick for yourself. Let's keep it kind of time boxed, but not too time boxed so you experience it. pick a 12-hour period sometime over the next week. And for that period, use transcription services and voice commands for your mobile computing experience and see how it goes.
Yeah, that'd be great, and kind of give us a feedback on it.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. If you decide to pick this challenge up, you know, drop us a line, send us a tweet, hit us up on Facebook, whatever you like, and we'd really be intrigued at your experiences. I will find a 12-hour period to try it.
I have an idea. We'll make it easy for them to do that.
How would we do that?
We are going to set up the brand new direct message Twitter button that was released this week on our Games at Work website.
Ta-da!
And ta-da! How's that for a segue? You were setting that one up so well.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. And so Twitter this week released a new message button that allows you to put on your website a direct message tweet. So go to gamesatwork.biz by the time you hear this episode. And over on the right-hand side where we have, you know, past show links, who the subscribers are, et cetera. And we will let you come to the website, click on that, and you can direct message our Twitter account, which is gamesatwork_biz, and let us know your experience. So, Michael, you were actually setting this up recently. What do you think?
I love it. I think it's a great and easy way so that people who don't want to go through the extra effort of finding the Twitter handle in your favorite Twitter client or on the web or whatever in the browser, you're just able to click a button and it will create for you the dialog box where you can send a message. And I think this is really clever. The other examples in the whole connect space here that Twitter has, I think are likewise pretty good too, where you can have a hashtag that you can click on and now it will create the beginnings of a tweet for you with that hashtag. So, you know, it's, it is exactly the hashtag you were looking for and not the one you weren't. So that's very clever. I like it.
These are not the hashtags you're looking for.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And should we put the experiment one on our website attached to this show? So if you want to tweet us just about this show, we'll have a hashtag, say, episode 145.
Oh, yeah. You know, we could do that. And I think there's a way to pre-populate the text just a little bit. Or we could have another one maybe just on the website in general. So if somebody wanted to directly tweet at us, they could do that from just the general website. So
we might have two buttons, one for your general tweets and one for this episode.
Yeah.
We could, but it might be too much work.
Or we could put four of them. Oh, no, just kidding.
We could have like a button that brings up more buttons that allows you to choose which button you'd like to press on the button. But you have to have a red staple. Well, so those are kind of the main links what we wanted to talk about this week. And there was one other one that I wanted to hit on. And Michael, I remember talking to you before that you weren't a big fan of this game.
I think I played it like twice. I don't know.
But I was. And way back in the day when Doom first came out, right? So there was Castle Wolfenstein, which is kind of the first 3D-ish game, and then Doom came out, which stepped up and made it better.
Didn't play that one so much.
And then came Duke Nukem. So Duke Nukem allowed you to go... So Wolfenstein was pretty much just on one level, and you could only shoot on one level too. Doom added the ability to tilt up and down and shoot, and to jump up on stairs. And Duke Nukem added the ability to fly around and really made it truly three-dimensional.
Right.
And that was kind of the cool thing about Duke Nukem. And then about 5 years ago, the ever-promised Duke Nukem Forever tried to come out. and it was panned. It was panned. It was just horrible. But they've promised once again to try and come up with a new Duke Nukem game. Or at least there's rumors that they might be doing it again. And Duke Nukem was this typical 90s action flick kind of tough guy with a lot of really inappropriate commentary and just goofy silliness in it, like a 90s action flick, which was fun about it. So maybe we're going to see a new Duke Nukem game on September 1st.
Or some of us might not.
Well, I do have it on my iPad. It came out. The original one was re-released on the iPad some time ago. I haven't played it in forever. But it's one of those things that brings back nostalgia to early games, early 3D gaming. And I'll have to see what they come out with and if it's cool.
That'll be pretty cool.
So, yeah. So I think that's all the time we have this week. Anything interesting that you're playing, Michael?
Well, the thing that I'm actually playing with right now, believe it or not, is I'm on a hunt for an Apple Newton. And I really wanted one when they first came out. And I know there was like all this, you know, jokes about stuff and the handwriting recognition wasn't as great as it could or should have been. But I was like, I always wanted to get one. And I've been sort of, you know, looking around, checking things out, seeing what's available. And so that's one of my fun things that I'm doing these days, because there's some neat forums that are out there with people who have Newtons, who have put them on wireless networks, who are pretty active users of the environment. So I'm looking to see where and how I might be able to step in and do it at a reasonable cost.
Well, it's interesting. Back when they first came out, I was doing architecture work for a healthcare company and architecting a field data collection device for nurses. And one of the platforms we looked at was the Newton. So I had a Newton for probably about 6 months and played with it back in the day.
And was it as cool as you would think it would be, or not as much?
It was pretty freaking awesome. Given the state of the technology back then, we looked at, IBM T-Series ThinkPad, which was a tablet, which had a pen. We looked at the Newton, and we ended up settling on a Windows for Pen device from Toshiba as our platform of choice, just because of the cost and the capability. We didn't have anybody who could write for Newton, so we were experimenting with the device, but it was pretty expensive at the time, and the Toshiba tablet was roughly the same price, if I remember correctly.
Oh, okay.
We could run Windows on the Windows 3.1 or 3.11, I think it was back then, on the Toshiba tablet, and on the ThinkPad T series, I think it was called. It was like a T700 or a 700T or 750T. Mm-hmm. We ran OS 2, and our servers were OS 2 based, but our devices we wanted out in the fields for the nurses had to be fairly rugged, fairly inexpensive, and very easy for us to program to. So we settled on the pen for Windows device. But it was really cool. I mean, it wasn't until the Palm Pilot came out and Graffiti was available,
right,
that I would say text recognition got good. I mean, it was good-ish. It really tried to be much better than the technology at the time could do.
True. And I had the Palm devices too, and I got pretty good at Graffiti along the way as well. So I think it, for me, I'm looking if I could to find like a 2100 or something, like one of the last versions of the Newton, as opposed to one of the early ones, because the last versions have the upgraded software and have some of the upgraded hardware capabilities. And that's when the handwriting recognition, kind of reminding me of the speech recognition from the earlier part of our show, got to be to a state where it was really, really functional.
Very cool.
Yeah. So that's what I'm playing with.
Cool. Well, I'm not playing with anything new. I'm still having fun, as I mentioned at the top of the show, playing with the Mr. Robot game. And I have currently hacked the one account, upgraded its security credentials, and we'll see how far we can go.
Go for it.
Well, we appreciate everybody's time and the feedback from the last week's show. Keep up the feedback. Test out the new direct message Twitter button that we have on the website as of this show. And we look forward to hearing from you. Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network. And would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.